This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
This is the Escape Hour. You're with Mark. Today I'm flying solo, but I do have two amazing guests who are going to talk about two completely different things. One guest is going to talk all about Italian cheese, and we have a real live Novocastrian to talk about the New South Wales North Coast. You're on Joy 94.9. You're with Mark. Now, I'm going to start off by introducing both Giorgio and Tony, who are live in the studio today. Good morning. Oh, good afternoon. Sorry, Tony. Good afternoon, Giorgio. Welcome to the Escape Hour. So let's start off with Giorgio. You were just mentioning before that your background was basically corporate and then you had a love for food and you've turned that into a business. How did you get into the Italian food business, apart from being born in Italy, which was a good head start?
Yeah, I think everyone connecting Italians to food.
Yeah, and rightly so.
Yep. And in the reality, we really are connected through the nonnas, the food. My story is I came from Italy in 2004, 14 years ago, and I couldn't speak English at all.
Really?
Yes.
Which part of Italy were you in?
Sicily.
Okay.
Sicily. My background was advertising in Italy, but here, of course, not speaking English, you're not really able
difficult to advertise.
Correct. So my first approaching was just live work in the first year was in the fruit shop, and the second year, moving on the north part of Melbourne, I was found job in a cheese factory. And the whole
had you had any dealings with food prior?
Yes. I have a little experience in Italy where in the last 2 years before coming to Australia, I was running a business with the typical product from Sicily.
So there was a little bit of exposure,
but really in the cheese making is so interesting today. I never have experience about that.
So you get this job in the cheese factory.
Yes. And my boss, it was a mysterious. An old man, every time I was asking, why the character today looks different? Why you want to know? I don't tell you.
So there was some intrigue.
Yes. So this is bring to me a bit of curiosity. So I have a brother living in Florence. I said, Giuseppe, please buy a book about cheese in Italian. send me this over. I want to understand a little bit more. Then when the book arrived, I started reading, experimenting at home, bringing some milk at home, experimenting some cheese making. So the passion started from that. Then a couple of years after, working to another different completely different style factory, as a box factory, I was having my morning free, and I decided to start to make a cheese. My first cheese was a kind of a mozzarella flat, can be rolled with other ingredients, and we named it bocconcini leaf. We named the bocconcini leaf just because my English was very bad, and the perfect translation at the time was for the cheese mozzarella sheet. But
was it because of what it looked like or tasted?
Yes, correct. It looked like a puff pastry. No. And then you're rolling.
I think you said sheet.
Yeah, correct. And this was the problem. That's why we named the bocconcini leaf, for not getting this kind of a trouble. Yeah, 2008 we started the business, and in 10 years now we have a beautiful brand new cheese factory in Thomastown, 3,000 square meters.
And how many people are involved in this factory?
When I started was myself.
Yeah.
In the morning doing production and afternoon delivery, now we are about 80 people.
Oh my goodness, yes. That's a lot of cheese.
Yes. We have about 42 different varieties of cheeses, between fresh and...
And all and Italian mature styles, right?
Yeah, we try to stay on it. There's just so many varieties still about... There's about 300 cheeses, traditional Italians.
Yeah.
We can still develop and experimenting on this field, on the Italian style.
So, George, what typifies a Sicilian cheese? What is, from your home cheese, what typifies it? What's the most?
The more typical Sicilian cheese is, Sicily is famous for the ricotta.
Ah, okay.
Ricotta, where with ricotta you're making the famous cannoli.
Yes.
And this is what we've been valuing in the last 2 years. We've brought up a new trend in Melbourne with the cannoleria by the Samore and cannoli, fresh cannoli filled with ricotta.
Yeah.
Traditionally, I make it with ricotta, so sweet. Ricotta, sugar, and cinnamon is the traditional recipe. and also to filled fresh for you, because one characteristic, they can only have to have a crunchy shell. So the secret is to fill them up at the last minute.
Right, so they don't absorb the moisture from the cheese and then lose their crunch.
Using this idea, we're launching in the next few weeks a new cannoli kit, where you can buy a box, a fancy box, actually. It looks nice with some cannoli shell.
Just in time for Christmas.
Correct. In the reality, we are light to 1 year. I was hoping to have last year for Christmas.
Right, right.
So, yeah, we have this beautiful box with inside some cannoli shell, a little piping bag, and everyone can improvise as a little patisserie chef. So we can cut the piping bag and fill them up with their own cannoli.
Oh, perfect.
And have it fresh on the table. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Tony, you're looking like you're ready for lunch.
Now, cheese all around.
So, Tony, you're originally from Newcastle.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's why we called you a Novocastrian. Is that a very common thing that people call?
Oh, yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're known as.
Yeah, and I sort of brought in the Italian, sort of Latin link to Novocastrian. Tell us about North New South Wales coast. We're doing a blended show today. We're going to Italy for food, and we're going to northern New South Wales for the sunshine and the coast. What's it like growing up in Novocastria?
It's chilled.
Yeah.
It's active. It's outside. There's lots of not coming home until late because there's plenty to do outside and with your friends and everything. Well, in the day, I'm saying, was walkable, was runnable, was rideable. You know, girls had skateboards and billy carts as well as the boys, so they were out there doing that as well. Most of your bikes didn't have brakes, so you had
decent thongs
that you wore down the heels on. A lot of activity was around the local pool. I grew up in Lambton, so Lambton Pool was, and still is, you know, quite a good pool with all the different. It's got an Olympic pool, a diving pool. It's got diving towers, diving springboards. The top tower's now closed off to the general public. You can only use it if you're in a diving club. But at the time,
too many injured.
Yes, yeah.
Too many
but
people
at the
bombing
time, it
and
was
belly
our
flopping.
Thing. Yeah. You know, it was like, do you dare? Do you dare? Don't push me! Don't push me!
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a 10-meter diving tower, which you just leapt off and hoped, you know, hope for the best. But
I can see why it's closed down.
Yeah, yeah. So it's an active community. There's plenty of beaches. I mean, I'm not a beach person, so my thing was to go to the beach with my friends when we were all young. I would get burnt to a cinder, blister, peel.
Classic.
Yes. So it was, but I didn't want to leave because everyone else was still there.
Yeah.
So I would just stay there and pretend I was a beach person, even though I'm not. But yeah, so my friends all
Newcastle is beach, beach, beach. It is beautiful weather, just north of Sydney by, what, 2 hours north of Sydney?
Oh, less than that, depending on how you drive.
Yeah.
130 k's.
Legally?
Yes, it's still, you know, still 130 k's up the freeway.
130 clicks. And it benefits from that beautiful coastal weather, but it also is getting very, very built by people moving up north, isn't it?
Oh, very much so, because the commute is so easy now. Like when I was younger, I lived in Newcastle and I used to drive to Sydney for work up the Pacific Highway. They hadn't built the freeway, so it took a long time to get there, and you'd be getting home
like
at 9 o'clock at night. Yes, very much.
Windy ride.
Yeah, and you'd always stop at the Oak because that's what you did.
Yeah.
To have a break. Whereas now, yeah, you can just go straight up the freeway and feel like, you know, no time's passed at all, barring incident or accident on the way, which can hold it up dramatically. Yeah. But particularly in the what's kind of around, you know, closer to the freeway, it's nothing to say that you're going to drive to work from there. So the train system is not so much handy in that area at the moment, and the public transport, which is not that great in Newcastle, to be honest. But as a drive, it's pretty easy. Yeah, it's very easy.
But big for holiday houses, sort of people.
Yeah.
Palm Beach right up to Gosford, all that New South Wales north coast. Huge for Sydneysiders to have weekend homes, weekends, Airbnb. The luxury accommodation has blossomed recently, hasn't it?
It has.
And the resort-style accommodation in and around Newcastle.
Yes, and a lot of the foreshore is being developed. Even in my last job when I was in Newcastle, our office was, you know, just there at the wharf, and then the view was then going to disappear because, you know, buildings were going up in front of that. But it was all because the demand is there for, you know, commercial as well as residential. But, yeah, lots of people looking to move into the city. They've built a new uni in the city as well,
division of Newcastle.
And so there's a lot of people looking to be a bit closer to that as well. At the time, they were ripping up the heavy rail line to put in the light rail, so the infrastructure hadn't caught up yet.
Right.
But
well,
that was
the
being
big
developed.
Infrastructure projects that have long-term benefits but very difficult to deal with at the time, but worth the pain.
Yeah, very much so, because you're like, okay, well, once I get into the city, how am I going to get where I need to go? But in your mind, you know that it's all going to be really exceptional once it actually happens.
Yeah, worthwhile. Yeah. Now, Newcastle's one of those great towns that's overshadowed because Sydney just absorbs so much of New South Wales tourism, and Newcastle's just up the road.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
We're on Joy 94.9. This is the Escape Hour with Mark, and we've got Giorgio and Tony. We've got the Italian cheesemaker and the Novocastrian in today, and we were off air just talking about the different types of cheeses that you're producing in Melbourne, and the innovative and the creative kind of cheeses that you're bringing together.
Melbourne has been fantastic for the Samurai cheese. When I started the business, it was at the right moment, just because the chefs were going holiday like in Italy and come back and looking for new product, something they were discovering in Italy. And the only guy who was producing something new was us, was me, with making new cheeses for the market. So we were the first to make trendy cheese like burrata. Burrata is a kind of...
Which is everywhere at the moment. Everyone's...
At the moment, yes.
Yeah.
We have burrata also been a champion cheese in Australia in 2012-2013 in the Grand Area Awards.
And so what typifies a perfect burrata?
Perfect burrata is to have... first of all, the traditional burrata is with chaos milk and is look like a money bag style. And inside is filled with stracciatella. Stracciatella lightly has become very, very well-known cheese as well. It's a product of stracciatella. It's a string of a little bocconcini, stretched and shredded, and mixed with cream and seasoned with salt. This has created the filling of the burrata. So the perfect burrata have to, on the plate, when you cut, start to come out of this filling and embrace the rest of the dish.
Nice and salty.
Nice and delicate, rich because the creaminess. Yeah, the salt have to be just balanced, but normally you feel the sweetness of the cream. Even the bocconcini is a sweet cheese. It's not very strong. It's very mild and delicate.
So how do you innovate that with local produce?
We do have a little shop in Carlton. It's our shop. It's called La Latteria. It's in Elgin Street 104. And the shop, La Latteria, is actually manufacture every day the mozzarella on site. So, and minded. If you run at the La Latteria at 9 o'clock in the morning or 10 o'clock, you find Dean and his guys or Maddie stretching the fresh mozzarella, stretching the curd.
And you can watch them do it?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
And you can have it freshly from the day. The best mozzarella you have to have fresh from the day is like a bread. You can have a bread 2 or 3 days old.
Yeah, it's
but
toast.
Fresh from the day is the best. At the same as the mozzarella. So in La Latteria, there is Dean or Mehdi or somebody else or Tom or whatever other person has been trying it, then making the mozzarella or the burrata fresh every day. Don't need to perform with a long shelf life. We're able to create the very funny, very fancy cheeses, like a burrata filled with stracciatella and nduja. Nduja is a chili mix, very Italian product, or chili and blue cheese, stracciatella and blue cheese, or stracciatella and pistachio.
Very pistachio.
Yeah, different variant.
What about Australian ingredients, like lemon myrtle or... Kangaroo.
Sometimes it's... I think you can still buy and put on the side and enjoy with it.
Kangaroo and macadamia.
Yeah, we try to match sometimes when we find something.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think there is a good matching. We're still Australian product. Australian milk. We're producing Italian-style cheeses, but with the best milk in the world. Australian milk is one of the best in the world.
Why is that?
Because in the rest of the world...
Because they're the same cows.
Theoretically, yes. correct.
But is it the grass they're fed? Is it
grass
the air?
Fed. Here they are on the farm, on the paddock, walking around, eating grass, they stay in the sun. When in the rest of the world, they are inside the shed, and they get fed with pellets or dry food or hay or silage. Or other
stressed.
Yes, yeah, different. The fresh grass from the paddock contains minerals directly from the soil. It's a difference. Always better quality. And you can see on the flavor of the milk, when you see the bara fat in the milk. We also bottle milk, we pasteurize, but the milk is animogenized, so the cream will go on top. And you can feel this freshness, this flavor from the grass. And fantastic.
So you do that with the milk?
Yeah, we do also bottle some milk.
So you have farmers that actually provide directly to you, and then you handle the milk from there?
Yeah, we buy the milk in tanks, and we pasteurizing ourselves, and we manufacture ourselves. So from milk, we create all different sorts of cheeses. We transforming cow's milk and buffalo milk, all from Victoria. The buffalo milk farm is in North Victoria near Swan Hill. And,
I didn't know we had a buffalo farm in Victoria.
Actually, more than one.
Oh, really?
There's another one. But they're very new.
Oh, okay.
I remember first time I was presenting buffalo mozzarella. Some people were asking me, why is it called buffalo? It's because it's big? Or somebody said, I might come from Mount Buffalo? Or whatever. Questions. So, yeah, not everyone knows that buffalo milk can give you answers.
Well, there are the buffalo wings to steer people
correct.
In the wrong direction.
Or buffalo grass. Correct.
So, Tony, talking about food culture, Newcastle, like all of Australia, is an immigrant town. There's a huge Italian community. What other food influences typify the Newcastle plate?
I think originally, as I was growing up, it was a fairly bland palate.
Anglo.
Yes, and it was very...
meat and three disastrously boiled vegetables.
Dried meat, very dry meat.
Overcooked.
Very tough meat, yes. Yeah. And, three veg. Everything was crumbed. You can still get anything you like crumbed in Newcastle.
Really?
Which was a great joy when I came back from Sydney and went, oh, my God, they've still do... Oh,
crumb
okay.
sausages.
You still crumb everything. Sea shanties, everything you can get.
Oh, wow.
But, it was very much a bland palate. If you there was Chinese. That was the basically the
and that
Asian.
And would be like lemon chicken kind
curry
of...
Prawns and
curry
rice.
Prawns.
Yeah, which you can still get in Newcastle, but I know because I left Newcastle and went to Sydney, so I was there for 23 years, and then when I came back, I was a bit devastated, thinking I'm going to have to lose all of my. I won't be able to get Thai. I won't be able to get Vietnamese. I'll have to go back to Chinese, and I got
food
there.
In Sydney's great.
Yes,
food in Sydney's
is
great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But I got there and it was all there. All, whatever you want, they've got now. And there's a lot of people who are moving there because the market there's for it. There's lots of really cool places to hang out and eat and to gather. And, without the actual crowd that you would get in Sydney as well. But you can eat on the coast, you can eat in the vineyards. It's all, the people are just starting up there. And you can drive into the Hunter Valley and do your vineyards for the day, and there'll be amazing chefs that have set up in that region, maybe affiliated with a winery, or they might be a standalone, and even the pubs and things up there are just amazing. So
it's quite analogous to Geelong, isn't it? What used to be seen as a place that didn't have much from a kitchen point of view now is associated with excellent wines. So they promote the excellent wines. They've got excellent produce, so they're using local. I mean, Victoria's best restaurant is in Bray, which is in the Surf Coast. You can't get in. It's an outstanding restaurant, but it's really focused on local produce in the Surf Coast. So that's what Newcastle's really focusing on, isn't it? Just sort of
yeah, it very much is. A lot of people are doing the local thing, which, people are really into now and people want, because food miles is a big thing as well.
Which is?
Food miles.
Food miles, what's that?
How far your food has travelled to get to you, how far the ingredients have come
carbon
from.
Footprint.
So people want to know the provenance of what's coming to them.
Mm-hmm.
So local is very popular and sustainable is very popular. So people are a lot more interested in what's going into their food and onto their plate than just turning up and ordering a meal. So, it's outstanding because I was, as I said, I was hesitant when I was going back thinking I'm just going to have to really dag down here, not to Chico Roll level, but I was pretty convinced that it hadn't happened in Newcastle,
and it had.
I was thrilled, thrilled.
Yeah. So, if we were to do a weekend in Newcastle, what would you say an itinerary would be of must-dos?
must-dos would definitely be the beaches and the harbour, and it would definitely be the valley. So even though it seems like two extremes, they're so close to each other. Like, everything in Newcastle is so close to itself that travelling to meet friends is totally different to somewhere like Sydney, where you all live so far apart that you have to meet somewhere common, you know, in the middle, or someone's a long way from home. In Newcastle, it's a lot different. You can get from A to B quite quickly. The traffic just isn't, you know, what you're used to seeing in you know, the more metro areas. It still has that regional vibe to it. But even then, they're putting, you know, different bypasses and things through so that you can get from A to B. Much easier to get to the valley even now than it used to be.
Yep.
But yeah.
So wineries?
Yeah, wineries, absolutely.
So you typically, if you did a weekender, would you recommend to stay at wineries or stay with well, I guess all those options are so strong.
Oh, they are very, like, there's a lot to choose from, and whatever your interest is, because some people might go there because they're golfing, or they're, you know, it might not be that they're particularly there for the food and wine, but they're going to get outstanding food and wine while they're there.
Mm.
So there's lots of options there. There's things attached to the wineries, you know, the Hunter Valley Smelly Cheese Shop.
Tell us about the Hunter Valley Smelly Cheese Shop. I love this idea.
Standing little
Giorgio smiling is like, more cheese. Yes.
Yeah. So that's there's more than one, but yeah, that's all kinds of boutique and gourmet produce. They do a lot of cooking on site, of things where it's really easy to go and have your lunch there, or you can get a picnic basket, or if something's on at, say, Hope Estate or Day on the Green, that kind of thing, then right. You can get things packed up ready to go, cheese platters and things that you can take with you that you don't have to prepare once you get there. And then, of course, they've got the amazing ranges of cheeses, which some are made under licence locally for them, and then they're importing as well.
Yep.
So, yeah, and you've got really knowledgeable staff to be able to say, look, you know, what are you into? Do you want to try something new, or let's go with what you're into, and I Fantastic. Can show you some really good examples of it.
Now, from an itinerary point of view, what is there to do apart from the wineries? Is there activities, or is it a sports city? Is that what you would focus? You know, like the harbour climb is something that so many people must do when they go to Sydney, or yep. take the Manly Ferry. What's the Novocastrian must do?
I think the must do for me is more, like, I really like to see nature. I don't like it on me, but I like to see it. I don't want it to touch me. But, Fair you know, enough. So things like the new memorial walk that they've put in, so you can walk along the beaches, but, you know, you're above it, so you're not just on road level. So you can walk all along the foreshore, around the harbour, around Nobby's, which has recently opened up the lighthouse for viewing as well, all the way along that stretch of beach. And then, you know, if you go, okay, well, we're looking for a little more country now, a little more green, go out to the vineyards. There's really great pubs to stop out on the way just with a group of friends. Even when I was, you know, early 20s, we'd go out with a group of friends and there'd be, you know, four or five cars with people in them, and we'd all meet up somewhere and we'd have a picnic and we'd maybe get in the river. We'd all have our little favourite pubs that we used to go, you know, stop out on the way home with a designated driver. But yeah, it's, so, you know, you could go to the vineyards, you could take your own little portable barbecue and set up and do that if you couldn't get onto a barbecue that was there. But it's kind of all there for either just kicking back and relaxing or really getting involved.
Right. Chilled.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a bit of a departure, the earthquake that happened, what was that, 90?
80,
no, 80, late
89,
80s.
I'm thinking.
It was around then. That was quite devastating for Newcastle and the people there, and although it's pushing 30 years ago, what are the ongoing differences in Newcastle from that event?
I think at the time, the Workers' Club itself, which is where most of it happened and where most of the deaths occurred, it was a major impact, because you could just stand there and look at a slice of the building that had, you know, been sheared off and carved down, and cars that were still down there. The city itself was a ghost town to walk through at night. Bits you couldn't walk to, bits you could. Hamilton, which is where in the Kent Hotel, where another of the major incidents was. That's one of the Italian areas that you would talk about. Within just an amazing culture, which has only improved after that.
So it brought the community together.
Yeah, it did. It was very much, you know, I don't think we had all the, like, looting and things that you hear about when these disasters happen everywhere else. It was very much getting the community involved and and everyone, you know, where were you, how did it happen, and helping people when it happened. No one knew what happened. I was in the middle. I was in a shopping centre when it happened. You know, I thought a plane had flown into the building before you ever heard about a plane flying into a building. We just thought it was an accident. The whole building kind of moved and moved back again. But again, you know, bits of the ceiling fell in, and so you went out and helped anyone that had, you know, who was in distress or needed help, while you all wondered what had actually happened. But I think it recovered really well in terms of bringing that community together. The concert itself that they put on was amazing, and so many people went to it just to kind of connect with each other. And yes, there was great bands, great music, etc. But it was all kind of coming together to go, yeah, that happened.
Is there anything commemorating that event in a museum or a memorial to visit, or is it something that's just a fact?
There are shots and stills in the museum. I'd only moved back to Newcastle throughout the last 4 years before. I've only been in Melbourne for 10 weeks.
Yeah.
So not necessarily that I would, you know everything that, that came as a result of that. But I think it's more something that you know about. There is footage there. There's, you know, like you can go into the museum and watch the footage and think, oh, I remember that newscast, or, oh, I remember walking down that street. And a lot of it is about how people got in and helped when it was required, when it was needed. People just turned up to help and offer whatever they could. So even though, you know, obviously there were danger zones, there were things roped off, there were things that you couldn't walk past or go
near.
And
that takes time to fix.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, it was also a bit of like, oh, well, it wouldn't hurt to get rid of that building. You know, it was kind of like if they had to demolish that building just through, not because it was a catastrophe in the earthquake, but because it was affected and therefore structurally unsound, you think, okay, well, there's some really hideous buildings here you could probably lose.
Let's move on.
From a callous early 20s point of view, you know, there's stuff here that could go and that would be okay, and maybe we'll get some funky new buildings and we'll get a bit trendy.
Very interesting. I mean, that was I remember it very clearly when it happened. It was because we were shocked. We don't get earthquakes or natural disasters like that in Australia. And for Newcastle to be hit so close to the centre of the city, I mean, how random is that? Australia's not a very built up island.
No, and you didn't know. Like, you thought maybe something at the BHP had exploded.
There were a lot of options
for things that could have been.
The refinery, yes.
So, and even the police came around, you know, we were all sitting outside having a horrendously nervous smoke and it was like, put that out, don't you know there's been a gas explosion? I'm like, no, I don't, because no one's told us.
No.
We don't know what's happened.
Joy 94.9 has a huge range of programs available for podcast. In fact, Joy is one of the largest podcasting communities on community radio. If you haven't checked out our podcasting service, you're missing out. Visit joy.org.au, click on the podcast tab, and you'll find a list of Joy programs regularly sharing the best interviews, news and reviews. There's tens of thousands of hours for you to enjoy, so check it out now, joy.org.au.
We're on The Escape Hour, you're with Mark. We've currently got Tony, the Novocastrian, and Giorgio, the cheesemaker. Just off air while Jolene was playing, we were talking, Tony asked the question of Giorgio, is there any kind of cheese you won't make?
Normally, I have a friend, she said to me, Giorgio, you are the hairdresser of cheesemaking. So I show you a photo, you test something and you make. In the reality,
you get creative. We've got the website up here, and the Drunken Buffalo piqued our interest.
Drunken Buffalo has been one of our successful cheeses.
So explain what it is.
The name is already fancy.
Yeah,
fun. People are expecting already a running Drunken Buffalo Kuno drive or whatever. In the reality, it's a buffalo milk cheese. And when we're making it, we wrap in wine lees. The wine lees is the mud at the end of the barrel. So it's a very sticky mud. Yeah. And also we stick on that the skin grape from Nebbiolo. These ingredients is a guy, a friend, Mario Marson from Guinea Marson from Itcot, supply us with these ingredients. And we created the cheese because we met together with Mario. One day I said to me, George, why not make this cheese? It's popular in North Italy. I said, all right, give me this stuff. I will try. And for giving more value, we use buffalo milk. And it's fantastic. People really like this cheese.
So what's the difference between cow's milk and buffalo milk from a
First of all, they are two completely different animals.
I know that.
No. They look similar. They look similar, but people are expecting to be the same family, so if they can also cross each other.
They can't breed together. Yeah. So they're different species.
Completely different species. Like sheep and goats, the buffalo also has been harder until now to change the breeding season, so the calving season. So we have more milk in the winter and less milk in the summer. Very expensive milk.
Is buffalo milk considered dairy?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So it has all the lactose.
Yes, in the reality, it contains less cholesterol. It's more high in fat and protein.
But you would treat it the same when you're working with
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely, yeah.
And does it behave differently? How does it?
Yeah, different flavor and also different composition. Think about having more fat and more protein in the cow's milk.
Okay. Less so it's more dense and more rich?
More dense. So from 1 liter milk, you make much more cheese than cow's milk. You have about 13% from Australian milk about cow's milk and 25% from buffalo milk. So you make from 10 liters of milk, you make 1.3 kilo of cow's milk cheese, you make 2.5 kilo of buffalo cheese.
Oh, so twice as much?
Yes.
Effectively, nearly.
Very nice flavor, actually, very rich and unique. And the buffalo milk is very delicate. White in color, doesn't take the beta carotene than actually the cow's milk take. Cow's milk, you notice, they're always more yellowish cheeses. And this is coming from that, from the grass.
So. Ah, okay. So with buffalo milk, does it come off like a cream as well? Do you have a buffalo cream?
You can make a buffalo cream, a buffalo butter. The global fat is much smaller, so it's naturally homogenized. Different story. The global fat of a cow's milk is much bigger, so tend to rise on top of the
milk. That's where the cream.
Yes.
So if somebody said to you, I've got a really good idea for a cheese, I can't wait to try this flavour, would you just be up for it, or would you say, that's horrendous, I'll never be able to go back to Italy if I do it?
Absolutely
I draw
no.
the line.
Absolutely no. All the cheese, I think, has been experimenting over cheese making. Think about it, with one ingredient, the milk. Let's say cow's milk. Think about how many cheeses you know they exist in, from yogurt to parmigiano to mozzarella to wash rind and brie and camembert and all different more and more variety of product just from one ingredient. No, definitely not. Actually, experimenting always give a chance to create more things.
Was that a pimento in that image?
Yes.
So I've got the website up, and there's
Diavoletti.
Thank
Diavoletti
you.
Diavoletti means a little devil.
So it's smoked and
is smoked and filled with an olive with chili. The Diavoletti means a little devil for the chili is inside. So it's a fresh chili.
Okay, so there's a little devil. And then surrounded by the cheese.
And then smoked. This is a kind of a mozzarella. Belong to the mozzarella family. So we're stretching. And when you're stretching with the hot water and the mozzarella become plastic, you can shape it in a few different shapes.
So you're just moulding it around?
You're moulding, yes.
So that's why we've got the sheet, so you can do things like make wraps.
Absolutely.
Right.
The Diavoletti in particular, they become champion cheese in 2014, 2017 in Australia, the Grand Area Awards in the category of flooded cheese. But again, we artisans. Even if we now in a nice size company, we still artisans. We have about 30 cheese makers inside the production room. They are shaping a different variety of cheeses all by hand.
One of my questions: how do you become a cheese maker? Is there a course to do? How do people get into this? Are they foodies? Is it an apprenticeship you do?
There is a course.
Really?
Somebody's lucky to do it. I become cheese maker just because I fall in love with making cheese, and then I.
How do you keep so healthy?
I couldn't see myself working in a night shift in a factory and making boxes.
I don't think many people aspire to that.
Listen, I have a few comments from my relatives say, oh, wow, you want to leave this company? It's a very secure job. And I say,
I see that.
Yeah. So, I become cheesemonger because also I fall in love over making cheese. Yeah. I always say to friends and customers, make sure you buy Australian cheeses. They're really good quality. I know many, many cheesemakers in Australia. They make a fantastic product. The milk is
wonderful. So what are other good examples of great Australian cheeses that people should be looking out for?
Doesn't matter. In the reality, Australian cheesemakers, they put in so much effort because of what they do. They try to compete with the European cheeses, with the French and Italians or cheddar from England or whatever. So they, for performing at the level, they put so much effort, they bring more results than what they're expecting. The product, the quality of the product is there. When you try cheese, it's made with love. You really taste the flavor and the love that is inside. Fantastic.
I didn't know that. Did you, Tony? That our cheese makers are so well regarded?
I just love to see anyone just hone their skill and just excel at it. Like, I'm in awe of people who just say, this is what I love to do. I'm doing it, and I'm doing it well, and I'm out there doing it well.
But your website, and if you want to go and have a look at some of these ideas that we're talking about, the website's thatsamorecheese.com.au. There are some beautiful food ideas that are really accessible things that you can do at home. We've got the ricotta delicata. So you've got serving that with, is that roasted hazelnuts and honey on it?
And honey, this is one idea, really. But in the same way, it can swing from savory to sweet and vice versa. Yeah, I mean, ricotta is very versatile. You can use an antipasto, you can use a meal, mild meal like a cannelloni with spinach and ricotta. You can also create a dessert like a baked cheesecake or cannoli or other stuff.
So there's some serving suggestions which I think are very accessible that most people would be able to do at home. The buffalo bocconcini you've got just served there with, is that Vietnamese mint?
These are probably Thai basil, yeah.
Well, oh, yes.
Micro herbs and stuff.
Micro herbs cracked pepper. And
well, we have also a few recipes. You can find the recipe online, and they are just or some. The chefs, they always create new ideas. So we have a chef working with us. They always create a new idea, and we present the recipe to magazines and on the web.
Simple. Is that insalata caprese?
Caprese. We're presenting in the very Italian style. So slicing the mozzarella, the fresh mozzarella, the fresh fior di latte, fresh buffalo mozzarella sliced. I say because my guys are always joking on me because I'm fanatic of slicing. Coming from Italy, nobody is ripping apart a mozzarella by hand.
Oh.
So what are they doing? They're slicing the tomato and they're presenting in this way. Sliced mozzarella, sliced tomato. This is the traditional way.
Right. Some cracked pepper, some basil, and
olive oil.
A little bit of olive oil. These are all really accessible things for people
Absolutely.
To do. It looks like some prosciutto or just some crostini with
prosciutto and mozzarella is a perfect marriage. In the reality, also fresh mozzarella goes and burrata and whatever goes very well with smoked salmon. So normally, not many cheeses are suitable to be combined with fish. Actually, we've been doing the au bocconcini leaf with raw tuna or with smoked salmon with fantastic results. And lately, we've been presenting with some friends oysters topped with buffalo ricotta and other dressing. Mm. Fantastic combination. Or with buffalo mozzarella or caciocavallo under the grill. With new applications, a very nice combination, yeah.
So I'm fascinated by this smoked bocconcini.
Yeah.
So how would you serve that?
Normally, in the way I love it, is I put in the fry pan and a couple of olives, and I toss it together, and then when you eat an olive together with a fresh bocconcino smoked, it's also sweet inside. So combines with the saltiness from the olives. I love it like this, warmth. Mm. Always warm. All the cheeses, the mozzarella family, have to be room temperature minimum. If you also cook a little bit, it will be perfect.
Mm.
And we all know, like a cheese like the fondue or the grilled cheese from the Alumi grilled cheese, always you have next level attraction for this cheese. They are warmed or grilled or whatever.
Tell us the story behind Secrets of the Forest. It's very poetically named.
This cheese was born in 2015 and come up from a friend. Then he was a friend from Adam Wilson from the great Certain Truffle from Perth. Then one day I roll up to me and said, Giorgio, I want to give you some truffle. Do you think you can do something with cheese? I said, okay, leave it to me. So on the next meeting we were having together, I brought it to him this box full of a high. He said, what's this? Look, white. I open up the high and I take it from the high, this cheese. It was a buffalo milk cheese with the truffle inside, wrapped in eye, and the rind was become earthy and moldy, and it was particular aroma. So it was a discovering. When you open up the eye inside the box, it took it out, this cheese was already wow. And then once we open, all the flavor, all the aroma from the cheese and the truffle
was, and the hay.
Yes, we mature in the hay.
So what is it? What notes does it take from the hay?
We're using wild, using wild hay. Wild hay coming from normally from hills, where it is the hay is more fine and also contains flowers and herbs, and it's very aromatic.
I would never have thought to flavor cheese with hay.
So you put this, you put it after the cheese is made, and we put the truffle inside the curd, and we seal the cheese. So we take it from the basket, from the brine. Brine is a solution,
salty water,
where you keep him, you keep it for a couple of days for absorb the salt, and then you take it out and we put in a hay, in the middle of a beautiful bushel of hay. So what happened? It created a microflora on the rind.
Ah.
And these aromas also go inside the cheese as well. So the magic is all there. And we present in this beautiful timber box, because we make it in small batches, so we release in limited edition. We presented this.
Well, this is a special occasion cheese. This is not to put with your ham and tomato
sandwich.
We all sandwich.
Must a special occasion. Absolutely.
Jaffel.
I think we all deserve a special.
Yes.
Yes, and this is for that.
Yeah. So do you find that you are more innovative here with the product than if you were in Italy, because you need to be more classic or more structured there? Can you innovate a lot more here?
You really nailed the things that I always said. I mean, the experience that I have in Italy is that the people, they're very conservative. They have maybe a recipe that is coming from the grandmother or before that, and they stick
to
it.
Oh, you mentioned
that.
Nonna.
We all have Nonna. And yes, and and so it's hard to do new things, because the people, they stick on the tradition from the town or from the region. And so actually what I found in Australia is the people, they're very open to new things, open to trial, to give you real feedback, and much more positive. Also, this blending of cultures we have, we can take the best of every way and put together with new creation.
Yeah, so the market's more open
absolutely.
To it, rather than you having to
thanks
create God, the market.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, so and you've expanded outside of that thinking and gone into gelato. I'm looking on the website. I'm getting very hungry. It's that time of the day. You've got...
Dessamore Gelato is the new baby of
Dessamore
Cheese, and in collaboration with Alessio Tavella. Alessio Tavella is a master gelato maker from Italy, arrived 6 years ago in Australia, and we started a collaboration just 6 months ago. The idea is to create a new monoportion gelato ideas for food service. So when you go into a restaurant, they sometimes don't have enough time to prepare something fancy.
They can plate it up.
And the dessert menu is just the usual tiramisu, panna cotta, mousse brim, blah, blah. You can actually try to have a new idea with a new strawberry semifreddo or pear semifreddo or a tartufo. Tartufo is, I think, the best of the range. We have three varieties. One is the classic, one is the nocciola, and another one is the pistachio tartufo. Tartufo means a truffle, and is not semifreddo, it's a gelato actually, with a soft center, and is on the other page down, and inside, up a little bit, up. Perfect, the one inside there is this sauce, chocolate sauce. When you cut the gelato,
no, don't make me chocolate sauce.
Guys, we finished this program. We go ahead.
We've got to go to a restaurant.
Go.
can consumers buy these, or is it only
trade? You can buy which is Fetcher Outlet in Thomastown.
Okay.
I invite everyone to come in Thomastown.
Yeah,
we open 7 days. The menu changing every day. Is
can you dine in there?
Just for lunch at the moment.
Yeah.
We're planning in the next couple of months to open up for dinner tonight, 2 days a week.
Okay,
we're waiting for the license.
Yeah, so that's an evening service on the weekends.
Yes, no, at the moment is just it will be yeah. on the weekends. At the moment, it's just lunch. Mm. 7 days open from 8 to 5, and the menu changes every day. We have some senior dishes. One is the porchetta.
Because I've never seen some of these dishes. I mean, Italian cuisine is very popular in Melbourne. We've got a huge Italian community. We are made very much who we are by the Italian community that's in Melbourne.
Absolutely.
Particularly our coffee. I mean, we're very heavily influenced by our Italian Australians.
Amazing.
But I've never seen some of these things. This is all very innovative stuff. It's not only the style of cheeses that's there. It's are these traditional Italian or are these
The Tartufo Classic is a traditional from a little town in Calabria called Pizzo Calabro, and is originally produced just because Alessio Tavella, our master, is coming from there.
Is similarly he doing innovative stuff in Australia because you don't have that level, that weight of expectation of the Italian cucina on them and sort of the...
Virgin market, Australia. So easy to create new things, and also again mixing of culture is been creating chai gelato
for
other community fan. Mm. And there's still space to grow a lot.
I'm going to put a link to this on our Facebook page. So if you're a fan of the Escape Hour, Joy 94.9, you can go and have a look and see these beautiful... It's a feast for the eyes, if nothing else. You're on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
So, Tony, you had an interesting question just wrapping up before of Giorgio.
Yeah, because I am so new to Melbourne, so obviously I'm looking for all the new experiences and where to go and things I might never have heard of unless I come across somebody. And I do talk to a lot of strangers at tram stops and shops and the rest of it. But if I were to come out to Thomastown, what would I experience in coming to you?
Really, what I'm going to tell you is exactly what I see in my customers' eyes when they roll up inside the shop. We have this beautiful shop. It's a new style Italian shop. It's not so much where you found a very nice atmosphere. Our staff is really... We have a lot of compliments for our staff. They're lovely. They promptly happy, smiling face, to happy to serve you and suggest you. And the food is like a Nonna style food, so every day you find something new on the menu. And with some product like the porchetta is coming from the oven every morning about 10 o'clock we do ourselves.
Wow.
And it's one of our signature dish, the gelato, the cannoli, the coffee, the music, the staff, the full atmosphere create an experience. This I can see in each people then coming there, and they're going out so enthusiastic, so happy. We will come back. It's been great, a big, great discovering. So I suggest to you and to everyone to come. Actually, I invite you to come. I really want to host you there and show you around. And you can buy cheese in bulky, like Italians do it, but also you can buy small pieces. You're planning to spend probably $20, you will go out with probably $200 bags out, but happy and smiling, I'm sure.
I would be smiling, I can tell you now.
Oh my God, just looking at the website of these beautiful... See, the thing is, my problem is, knowing that they're all going to melt, I'll eat them while I'm there.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for coming on the show. Really appreciate your time. And fascinating to know that we've got Italian culture here in Australia that's being evolved and becoming very Melburnian on the way. That really inspires me.
There's... Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Sonny.
I want to try that hay-infused cheese. Mm-hmm. Tony, thank you very much for joining us on Joy 94.9. Great to hear about Newcastle. And I am going to get myself there next year. In 2019, I'm going to have a weekender in Newcastle.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.